Hello, and thank you so much for joining us tonight to celebrate summer and all things poetry with Hemingway's Summer Poetry Series. Week one, which starts today, will feature writers Lisa Alexander, Dorley Brooks, Sheila Spionti is here in spirit, and Stephanie Chubbuck. Hemingway's will take place here in person at White Whale all summer long, every other Tuesday for the next 8 weeks through August. Evenings at 7 p.m. The Hemingway Summer Poetry Series was founded by Jimmy Savetic in 1974 or thereabouts. It is co-hosted and curated by Joan E. Bauer and Christopher Collins. You can RSVP for all of the forthcoming events in the series on our Facebook page, and each event will be live streamed unless otherwise noted. And you can check out the audio archive of the past series at www.hemingwayspoetryseries.blogspot.com. So quickly, a little bit about myself and White Whale. My name is Ari. I'm an events assistant here at the bookstore. White Whale Bookstore is a family-owned, general-interest, independent bookstore located in the Bloomfield neighborhood of Pittsburgh. Our store motto is conversation, community, and culture, and we strive to be a home for book lovers. Our events programming features local, national, and international writers and translators reading, discussing, and celebrating literature of all genres for all ages. So for a few upcoming events that we think you might be interested, this upcoming Friday, May 5th, we are so excited to welcome Sarah Seifert back to her hometown of Pittsburgh to celebrate her rich, layered debut novel, The Skin and Its Girl. She'll be joined by Sarah Zava Setra, and we can't wait for this conversation about family, inheritance, and storytelling. And next Tuesday, May 9th, we couldn't be happier to host Christina Marusik in celebration of her nonfiction book, A New War on Cancer. Christina will be in conversation with Danny Wilson, Executive Director of the Cancer and Environment Network of Southwest Pennsylvania. You can find out more about these events and on RSVP online at whitewhalebookstore.com. We are currently live streaming this event on Zoom for folks at home. So, hey, folks at home, we appreciate everyone here being here with us, whether it's virtually or in person. And so, just a few quick notes about the protocol for the night. We do ask that audience members keep their masks on at all times unless you're actively eating or drinking. The restrooms are located behind me. My request is that if possible, you hold on to heading back there until after the event, but no worries if you gotta go. And the ice machine, it gurgles sometimes. It's gonna be a little awkward, maybe a little surprising. It usually lasts for 60 seconds. It's probably gonna happen, so there it is. The last call for the cafe is immediately after our event ends, and you're also welcome to hang out for a bit at the end of event and browse our entire stock. Your support of the store is what makes free events like this possible. And we also have books here from Dora Lee and Sheila, who is here with us in spirit. So that being said, let's get it started.
Hi there. Hi, I'm Chris Collins, co-something, along with Jill and Bauer from Hemingway's. Outstanding. Thanks everybody for coming out tonight for the season premiere of 2023 Hemingway's on this summery evening, since it is the summer poetry series. Thanks for that. Thanks so much to White Whale again for hosting us these last couple of years online, taking care of all the technological stuff that Joan and I have no idea how to do, and just providing such a wonderful home for the series, and a home where everybody can feel safe and comfortable and respected is so important to us. So thank you to White Whale. Thank you to Ari for running this for us tonight. I really like your shoes. Yeah, so it's a reading series, so I'm going to read something. Also, there's beer here. This is the White Whale. I recommend it. I'd like to thank having Hemingway's present at this bookstore was an incentive to install beer taps. Okay, so this is from a collection of essays by John Shulian called Twilight of the Long Ball Gods. It's a collection of baseball essays. And this is a piece that he wrote some years ago called Laughing on the Outside. And it's about Josh Gibson. If you don't know, he played in the Negro Leagues. He's a Pittsburgh guy. He played for the Homestead Grays. He played for the Pittsburgh Crawfords. He is arguably one of the greatest players to ever play the game, certainly one of the best hitters to ever play the game. Shulian writes, "They called him the Black Babe Ruth, but he was more than that. He was a 1,000-watt celebrity in the parallel universe that spawned him, and his star shone brightest whenever he rolled into one of the big cities on the Negro League's endless caravan, New York or D.C. or sweet home Pittsburgh. He would hit the jazz clubs then, places that were to Black players what Toots Shores was to the Yankees. And he would rub shoulders with Lena Horne, Duke Ellington, the Mills brothers, as if they were old friends. After a while, maybe they were, because they let Gibson get up and sing with the band, sing something smoky or swinging in that rich voice of his." So, real quick, Gibson's stats, just so you get it in your head. He had a .354 batting average for his 37 years in the Negro Leagues. He got a .373 for two summers in Mexico and .353 for two winters in Cuba. In 1943, he had a batting average of .517. I'm not a sabermetrics kind of guy, but I understand that's impressive as shit. But Shulian goes on to say this. "There was heartbreak at both ends of his journey. Though the focus usually falls on his premature death, he died at 35. Overlooked too often is what he had faced 17 years earlier, when he was just a kid with a big future in baseball and a pregnant girlfriend who became his wife. The former Helen Mason was 17 when she gave birth to twins, then died before she could hold them in her arms. From that day forward, Gibson didn't stop running until he too was in his grave. Fatherhood scarcely slowed him. Indeed, it might have done just the opposite," says James A. Riley, director of research for the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum in Kansas City, which I've been to. It's a fantastic museum. Check it out. "Every time he saw those kids, he thought of his wife. The thought, if you accept Riley's theory, was more than Gibson could bear." So in the end of Gibson's life, he was a lot of liquor, he was a lot of drugs. He was in a mental hospital for a while. He's buried over here in Allegheny Cemetery, and it took 30 years for his grave to get a marker. That didn't happen until 1975. But I like, in this essay in particular, and why I'm reading it, I love the image of him on a stage, maybe at the Crawford Grill, just singing a song with Ellington's band. Maybe Ben Webster on the horn or something. Singing, I'd like to think that he had some real good feeling towards like the Ellington song, since Billy Strayhorn grew up not too far from him. Wordsworth wrote that poetry is, I'll get this straight, the spontaneous overflow of powerful feelings. So who's to say that Josh Gibson wasn't a poet? That maybe not so much when he was on the field, but after hours, all of that feeling that he had from this life that he was living, the highs and the lows of it, the very acute knowledge that none of it might even matter a few years from now, from when his career was over, and for a while it didn't. But still going on, and still with the weight of it, he could take to a stage, and express something deep in his heart. And that's what this series is about. All series like this, just across the country, around the world. People taking time out from their lives, stepping in front of a microphone if the microphone's available, not always, and expressing something true about themselves, about being human. Doesn't have to be under lights, and you don't need a famous tenor saxophone behind you helping you along, though I recommend it if you can get it. But I just like that image of Josh Gibson. It's one I haven't heard of before, and I just wanted to share that with you guys tonight. So thank you for coming out. Thank you to Dora Lee, Stefan, Lisa for reading tonight. Really, really fucking kick-ass poets. And thanks for coming out again on this lovely summer night. So thanks a lot.
I want to really thank you all for coming out tonight. We're really thrilled to be opening with such three such wonderful poets. Sheila Squanti, unfortunately, cannot be here tonight, but we're thrilled that our readers tonight are Dora Lee Brooks and Lise Alexander and Stefan Triplett. I want to mention before I introduce them that our something about 2 weeks from now, you can't remind people enough. 2 weeks from now, our poets will be Jan Beatty, John Rep, Fred Shaw, and Michelle Stoner, who is here tonight. And so I hope you will mark your calendar for being here that night as well, and hi to everyone on Zoom. Okay. And again, I really want to say a big thank you to White Whale. It is astonishingly great to be able to have this series here in this truly hospitable, warm, supportive environment, and we are here not only to enjoy the joy of poetry, but also to be in community with each other, which is so important. And also, let me remind you to buy some books. So there are some books. There are some books here. And they're fabulous books. So, you know, please do stay around after the reading and look around and find something astonishing. For myself, I absolutely have to say that the greatest incentive for me in writing is to read something that I knew nothing about. And I don't find the muse like she flies in and lands in my backyard much, but I'll tell you, books are my muse, and they are the best muse I've found. So there's a lot here to choose from. You never know. Our first reader tonight is Lisa Alexander. Her full-length book, Rattle Body, is coming soon. From Get Fresh Books, sometime in 2023, we're not sure when, but soon. And her poems have appeared in journals like Tupelo Quarterly, Two Bridges Review, Pittsburgh Poet Review, and others. She has an MFA in poetry from Drew University. She is a longtime mad woman in the attic. She was the sound engineer for Prodigy for some years. And with Kayla Sargeson, she's been co-curating the Laser Cat Reading Series in Pittsburgh. Please welcome Lisa Alexander.
Thank you, everybody. How's that? It's going to tilt on me, I think. Okay, cool. Hi, I'm really happy to be here, and I'm happy to see everybody here and there. And I want to thank Joan and Chris, especially for this series. I've been a long time fan of it, and I'm just so grateful for what you're doing and continue to do. And also thankful for White Whale and all the great things that have happened here over the years. And I just appreciate everybody so much. And I'm happy to read with some great people tonight. So some poems. So I'm from Alcova, Hopewell Township, and the B.F. Jones Library, Jones and Laughlin, JNL still is out near the library. I spent a lot of time there growing up. So that's where this comes from. B.F. Jones and my mother have nothing in common, or do they? Maybe marble steps, the statue of B.F. bronze and stalwart in the entrance. Franklin Avenue cold in the winter, even when there was ice cream nearby. Maybe there still is. But back then, it was more popsicle stick mangers and Elmer's glue in the library basement. The construction paper heavy and dull, but oh, the rubber grip scissor slice. Oh, the chup, chup, chup of cutting a background circle for the Virgin Mary, biting my lip, and my mother, Maria herself, tempered by her dark brown hair, snapping her trident thumb, holding the vast sheet for me as I slice it, soft feet slipping through the backs of the big wooden chairs. I cut more circles, glue more wood, as my mother holds the apex together, peels the glue from my fingertips with my prints, now see-through, still swirling on them. This next one, the first line is titled. Kids out the window, sound like goats. The sky gray like the lining of my pockets. Smells wet, like my McDonald's birthday party. How I love the fryer, the behind the scenes, the candy grimace on my cake, too sweet, but gritty between my teeth, which are rotting early. A constant ache in my mouth. A little guy with a pickaxe beneath my molars, heaving its point into my gums. He must be installing steel tracks inside my jawline for some subterranean city that will never be unearthed. When I smile, no one can see it. And it's likely that I'll never point this out to you. I'll just watch a woodpecker peck the awning outside my window without welcoming it into my mouth. I'll try not to worry about what's beneath your gum line, what hover-tracked universe you harbor inside your skull. And instead, I'll think about goats. I know they kick everything over. And so would I, if I could get away with it. Mm-hmm. All right. From Crown Down Beyond. My neighbor is showering through these Kennedy-era walls. The skidding whistle of old pipes will last 15 minutes or so. She's scrubbing herself just on the other side of my cold wall. Maybe just standing there, biblical. Like I often do, hands cupped to catch water at her chest, chin tilted like a statue of Mary perched on a shelf. Surely there's redness patching her skin as she dials higher and higher for warmth, inching the knob to keep the hot sting, letting the water butter her from crown down beyond her into the drain, muting her ears, water beard falling from around her open mouth. It's funny when I'm putting this assortment of poems together, finding things that I write about repeatedly and don't realize, because it's not like whole things, but like oh, Virgin Mary keeps coming up in here. It's like, I don't know why, but there it is. Jesus Christ birds.
Yeah.
700,000 or so, chattering away in the yellow tree, taller than my neighbor's old-ass mansion. The racket, so manic, I nebby neighbor my head out the window in my men's department store robe and yell, Jesus Christ, birds. And it doesn't matter. These are bird-shaped birds, little arrow shadows, ditching up a ruckus, ticking, kicking like gravelly rockets. and crackling like the moment before the Rolling Stones come out, just as the lights go down, arena crowd loud. Reassurances. Listen to Whitney Houston ask, how will I know? Like it's still summer of 85. While outside, you will hear an upset dog barking out of fear of another dog, also barking out of fear, as their leashes both pull taut in the cacophony that startles us all, launching robins into the pink sky of this frozen and otherwise still morning. A woman's voice, it's okay, trying to reassure everyone. But her pitch is hinged too high, too bright. And although the dogs soon settle into defensive huffing, stretched all the way out to the end of their leashes, no one really believes her. Pullover. The violin here could sound so much alarm, the siren out there among the trees, and so much I forgot how to do, why to do. I go for the plug, the checkmark box, electronic escape, wired cloud, whole other planet. Instead, I'm here culling bird sounds, ship, scrape, drum. Oh, we know that blue, how it tilts the day. How I'd rather the golden square within the neighborhood dark. We've known that always. And how far away from myself can I go? Have I ever been? Even the clearest stones you can't see all the way through. Go on, go back. Not backwards, but back for that case with the smooth handle left on those wild turns you made and dropped. You know it's there in the moonlight with the wolves and the crab apples, but it's yours, even though you unbuckled, ejected yourself under the trees, decided to trust the leaves and their protections instead. Dogs show up a lot in my poems too, even though I'm really very much a cat person, but I like all the animals. So. Tin cup dog. Tin cup dog swings his brushy tail back and forth along the flat cold floor, sweeping up dust with his wiry copper fur. Dinner was good last night. Burgers and red wine vinaigrette. I'll take it any day, but it won't take the other bad news. Bad news today, those dogs I don't want to look, don't want to know any of it. I'd rather keep my eyes on the A-line skirt and candy lips of this soft woman, or maybe even this endless ray. Back of the neck excitement surges through me at the mere mention of the Blue Ridge Mountains, which, like me, contain a massive range of tiny bell desires, like taste buds wrapped in salty brine, washed over by the thickest chocolate cake. How could I have possibly been both Naomi Watts and a young man who was hiding the fact that years ago he shot Jeff Bridges with a very small gun in the middle of the night in Hopewell Township, Pennsylvania? But I was also the high school classes they both took, and I was the memory in the boy's mind, hoping not to be discovered. Dreams like this are vents. My body counts on the sound of water in the mouth, the brush of lips grazing the phone receiver to be reminded that it is more echo than matter. It counts on the quick breaths taken when you're impossibly close to someone else and they breathe back in response. And just a few more. I camp a lot too, so camping shows up a lot. When you walk away from the campsite as it's getting dark, you can come back now, I'll say, and mean it deeply, even though I can still see your back through the trees, shoulder blades realigning in shadows as you hunt for kindling, your red shirt fading into forest dust. Because who are you or I without our lips popping open just beyond a long, cold drink, without our house framing anything, everything escapable and burning quick, bright dots high into the air, straight through to the darkness of what surrounds us, which is really just another way to say sky and what it contains. Okay, two more. The plum tree. If you've ever led a strand of children across a busy road to get them away from your dead grandmother, you'd know that one will always lag at the end of the line and stare at the ambulance behind you. Two of them will fight. The brothers will shove each other into the door of the KFC, creating a scene for the customers who all saw you coming, red lit halos swirling behind your heads. You're not really old enough for this kind of charge. Not that you want to be. Your short arms are still reaching out the upstairs window for deep purple plums from the highest branches while she holds you tightly around the waist. Okay, it's my last one. Thank you for listening. I appreciate it. I stare at the house every time I drive by. You'd want to go down Evelyn Street with them. See who changed their minds, who has lines under their eyes, see who has the crazies at their feet and listen to the songs we would get off on. Someone will be spinning. You'd want to drive by the stop sign that exists because the girls were struck there. Luckily, they lived. Not time for them to sit with our Joey, only dead a few months, our aching still abundant. He'd wear a tiara, strength of royalty, a setting in his curls, a protective shield. What was it that was so good? Catnip, pair of socks, queen alien, hand-rolled, back porch, 10-day eviction notice, jobs abandoned to drive nights singing into sunrise rush hour, smoking and laughing, faces out the window fluttering, stared at, car bouncing its tires through the steep streets, McArdle and Beechwood, Bob's and Monitor, getting schooled on motion, unveiled. People painted together, people painted shut, people embedded within each other, breathing through the bubbles. There were cracks when they dried. You chipped yourself to taste. Virgin Mary blue. Couldn't drive far enough, the car getting smaller. Everyone was spilling out the doors. Thanks very much.
Wow. Doralee Brooks, Professor Emerita at the Community College of Allegheny County, and is a madwoman in the attic instructor at Carleton University, a fellow of the Western Pennsylvania Writing Project and the MCAV econ. She holds an MED from University of Pittsburgh, an MFA from Carlo, and her poems have appeared widely, including Patterson Literary Review, Pittsburgh Poetry Review, Dos Passos Review, and others. Her chapbook, When I Hold You Up to the Light, happens to be right over there, and it won the 2019 Kathy Smith Bowers Chapbook Contest published by Main Street Rag. Doralee is City of Asylum's Poet Laureate of Allegheny County, 2024. Please welcome Doralee Brooks.
Thank you. It's so great being at Hemingway's. I remember in the 80s when, can everyone hear me okay?
Yeah, so, yeah.
Okay. Is this better?
Yeah.
Better? Okay. I was teaching at Waste Campus in Monroeville, and Michael Worcester and Professor Nancy Gabrielis would bring the students from CCAC to Hemingway's. And it was just such a joy. And whenever I'm at Hemingway's, I just feel so happy to be a Pittsburgher because it's just amazing. So thank you, Joan and Chris. And so great to be reading with Lisa and Stefan as well. I was reading Sharon Old's Ode to Dirt, and it inspired some odes. So this is called Ode to the Dress. After the blue cactus reading, Everyone is laughing, me too, because Luce has just said, Doralee is being very quiet now because she knows that she never goes anywhere without the right dress. And I say that Luce can take one suitcase for two people for 3 weeks anywhere in or outside of the country. Luce doesn't know how I flipped through Vogue.com for 50 times Michelle Obama wore the Empire sweater dress, that I can't resist Town and Country's times the Royals wore aquamarine. It's funny, really, when I think about it, because my mother never cared anything about what she wore. Mostly baggy house dresses, the big pockets filled with clothespins, or an errant child's shoe, or a new baby's wand bottle. She bought us boxes of cardboard dolls, their endless array of prêt-à-porter, and the bride doll, too pretty for play, which stood on a high shelf, her face perpetually wide-eyed with wedding jitters. Convention says that if you wore it the first time, don't wear it again, which may be true for the trendy padded shoulders, mini skirts, hot pants, go-go boots. But ancestors, the eternal presence, live and live again. The captain, Asian, African, Russian, Andre Leon Talley's signature, Beatrice Arthur's topper, the Moo, Hawaiian, Mother Hubbard's offspring, cousin to the 50s house dress. The young poet would never guess how distracted I was from her reading, even sitting here now, how she performed consummately in stiletto sandals, the scarlet lip gloss, flawless. So in thinking about odes, I always think about Lucille Clifton's Homage to My Hips and also Patricia Smith's Motown Guzzle. Hips, after Lucille Clifton and after Patricia Smith. My hips hold me on weak knees and unsteady ankles as I pull spiky weeds like needles from the side of the house, wearing Michael's leather work gloves. He tells me to spray and wait, but I don't have patience. I used to brace Janine on the left hip and take her older brother by the hand many mornings when we walked the block to the sitter's house. Hips girdled and stalking, I'd speed down a steep cobblestone street past Crescent Elementary, hop the 88 Frankstown, transfer to the hill, arrive an hour before St. Benedict the Moore's AM kindergarten. A morning of, what are you wearing? If you're wearing red, stand up. If you're wearing brown, sit down. A morning of, open shut them, give a little clap. open shut them, fold them in your lap. Janine liked to plant her small hands on what would become her hips. You know the pose. An unruly posture she carried into her teens. A provocation she eventually learned not to do in classes, readings, conversations. A tell, code, blues. She learned to subdue, then learned to uproot. We lost Harry Belafonte, the great Belafonte. And these three poems are a tribute to artistic pioneers. Hallie. You didn't recognize me as Vivian, hunched over, rug weathered on a Spike Lee street. I refused to bathe for a week. Ask Samuel Jackson what I smelled like. Later, Bond girl Jinx on a Spanish seaside cliff, our Cuba. I stripped the floral sundress covering my belted Andress bikini dived like an exotic bird, a smooth back flip to the waiting liner. But you liked me best in the one that got an Oscar. Me, Letitia, a convict's wife, clinging to the death row jailer, entwined tight as ass. A barber cut with Carmen Jones. Carmen, the shop assistant, slender and kinetic as a twig in wind, scrubs my hair, says how she waxes herself down there. Your hair's soft, she says. Meeting Carmen here takes me to pictures I've seen of Dorothy Dandridge. Tragic mulatto, Donald Bogle chaptered her and Lena. Dandridge in his book poses as Carmen Jones in gypsy skirt and gold hoops, arches her foot, exposes a cafe au lait thigh. Sex talk was everywhere in barbershops growing up, says Charles Blow, an unfortunate name for the author of Fire Shut Up in My Bones, who wears his head shaved. Fluid, he calls his orientation. Carmen caresses my fingers when she takes the tip. Diz. Diz, believer in spiritism, in roots, you captured me. Seemed so innocent then. Weren't you the youngest guy in Paris photos, white shirt, dark tie? Played the Paris Apollo, the supper clubs, diners fighting. You call that music? And Mez, them boys will never play two notes when 200 will do. Now you don't let me go. Tonight, it's a night in Havana with YouTube. You and Castro in costume. Your nautical cap, Castro's army fatigues. Study your gift, to be or not to bop. Your entourage moves through the airport scenes like dancers tapping clave, leaping snatches of light in a ghost catcher's camera. Baraka found you in dusty recordings, called you high priest, royalty, likened bebop an African idiom, the speech of ooh shooby dooby oo, and the bent horn a translating passage. I was reading this serialized novel called OK, Mr. Field, when I wrote this poem. I think everyone's loves series. I know I'm a big, I just, if it's a series, I have to go for it. Are you an architect? I recall a line from OK, Mr. Field, a serialized novel, as I drive past the now shelled out row houses on Bennett Street. Only the exteriors remain. My college friend Charles lived here and complained when the neighbors didn't keep up. In the story, it's all about the house. House, lonely house, summer house, white stucco house on a mountain in Cape Town that in Hopper's solitude overlooks the sea. In Charles's room, a paper lantern floated over the bed like a blood moon. And Stevie Wonder's songs in the key of life streamed from the walls, filled every sensation of space. Back in the day, before the Joneses raised the stakes and everyday people learned the language of the ARM, the balloon payment. Before I ever heard someone say house poor, too much house. Before Detroit evolved beyond Motor City, Motown, blue brutality, black uprising, became the name for collapse. Before McMansion was a joke, narrow lawn, no furniture, ghost street, no one home, and the promised invites just another Americanism, such as, how are you? Have a nice day. And when I wrote this poem, Living with Furniture, I had just read Sharon Fagan McDermott's Living Without Furniture. So this is called Living with Furniture. Even after 20 years reupholstery and an incompetent repair that left it lopsided, I held on to the sofa. Cotton, velvet, tufted, chocolate, like the Labrador we called Sheba, Fran's chocolates and smoking loon Merlot, the inscrutable hours before dawn, like blankets of biography, Du Bois, Robeson, Davis, like Shimon Hansu dancing to Jackson's Love Will Never Do Without You, until the family approached me in the tone reserved for the hoarder. A counselor said he'd never take on a family and asked, why don't you let people help you? Two lifetimes from my grandmother's custom plastic slip covers. I bought it for the first apartment when I would wash my complete wardrobe, 5 well-worn pairs of jeans and 5 peasant tops once a week. A friend I'd met in high school lived on the 3rd floor. Our landlord stole electricity from us and tangled his service with ours, alternated robbing each apartment. My mother called our group the Save the People because we met on Sundays to study. Crisis of the Negro intellectual, Black bourgeoisie, and Aptheker's The Morning Breaks. Critiques of the Black middle class I carry through the decades. My library of doubt. So these last two poems are about reading, the magic of reading, the transformative power of reading. And this poem, Reading Raymond Carver, has some lines in it from Carver poems. Reading Raymond Carver. I'm reading Raymond Carver at the cluttered desk, and the exposed brick walls chill like a cell this wet Friday afternoon. I left my energy at last night's reading, Anne Waldman singing, and manatee, manatee, humanity, for 60 minutes that felt like 20, even after the Latin dinner. Chorizo and black bean sopa, pumpkin and piñatas, and all I could drink. Carver's final lines enclose like lids. Any minute now, something will happen. I'll leave late for class, lay the book face down and simmer it. And this is the last poem, it's called Talisman. Beelzebub's toothless head grins from the slender neck of the chalky-skinned girl in the coffee shop. Does she know who he is? What's his magic? Once someone asked me, a little black girl, where did you get this? I wore the gold star of David like a medal, then I wondered why I had it. Once on a Sunday morning, I saw Oral Roberts calling the ill and injured to place their hands on the television to pray. I watched my grandmother shuffle from bed and with her right hand lift her left on top of the 12-inch set. I kept quiet, pretended to sleep. This morning, from my shaky corner table, I'm reading Philip Levine's The News of the World, the jacket papery in my hands. The last poem, Magic, rises up like a shield to the armies of pestilence marching this day.
Hey, Doralee. Thank you so much. I will just mention again that her child is right up there. And copies. Now, last reader this evening, last featured reader, is Stefan Triplett. He is a poet and essayist from Joplin, Missouri. His essays have appeared in Electric Literature, Longreads, Rich Hub, Vulture, on the Iowa Review. Stefan currently teaches at the University of Pittsburgh, where he is the assistant director for the Center of African American Poetry and Poetics. His first book, Bad Forecast, is forthcoming from Essay Press in 2024. Please welcome Stefan Triplett.
Thank you for that. Can everyone hear me? Okay. So thanks to John and Chris for the invite. It's been a while since I've been invited to a poetry reading. I get asked to read essays a lot. So I'm excited for this space in particular. And I want to say thank you to Doralee and Lisa for sharing the space as well. I'm going to read some poems that are new for the first half, and the second half I'll read books that are from the forthcoming book. This one's called Ovid. My partner leaves town for a month and all the plants die. I'd interpret this as ominous if I hadn't stopped trying to find extra meaning where there isn't any. If I hadn't learned there's a difference between things happen and everything dies. Once again, I find myself wearing ill-fitting underwear, and lately objects around me are all sloughing off. A roll of paper spills out from my grasp and into the toilet. A stranger clips the side mirror from my car when it is parked. I chew off a hangnail, and days later, infected, is stale and yellow as the morning sun. Just now, I awoke from a dream where there was already a sequel of the last movie I watched before falling asleep. In the dream, a girl turned into a flower, submerged at the bottom of a campus lake. When angry, she would surface and unfurl, scream how she and the world were always at odds to any lake dweller who neared her. In the dream, I bleached my hair and lost my curl pattern. In the dream, my sister and I were in school at the same time. She was much more popular than I was, but we still remained friends. It all made more sense in my head. It all felt full of meaning just until I opened my eyes. If I wrote all my poems in the morning, they'd be strange and expanding. If I made all my decisions in the morning, they'd be bursting bladder in a good way. Loose bottoms, flailing leaves, meaning dictated by immediacy and nothing more. This is called Rewind, after Zan Phillips' poem, Film Theory. When two men kissed, there used to be danger. On television, where there once was danger, there is now vibrant color. Color bursts and vibrates on screen, even if no one is there to see it. Have you ever seen something that buzzes inside you? I am watching two kids encounter each other with pure admiration. Television shows me alternate tasks in Technicolor. A show I adore made me feel like we were living a warm, pleasant future. Two high school boys go on a date and their parents know. A boy I adore takes me back to my adolescent past. Glimpses of the past will make you imagine safety where there isn't any. Tense is a lie. What is your present is someone else's future. A me I love's past, it disappeared, so I fill it with my guts. Most days I can distinguish between my own experience and the characters. Some days my own adolescence feels as if it were extinguished. Still a memory, I've savored ends and I feel as if I am breaking up. I am watching two boys kiss on screen, and for once there is no secondhand shame. This is called Trace. It was written here in Pittsburgh. It's about Trace Brewery in Pittsburgh. The boy I have a crush on is dancing on someone else at an outdoor bar that somehow brought all the Black queers out in this small city. The boy I have a crush on is not all that interested in being a boy today. wearing black stockings, a black pleated skirt, tan flesh peeking through. I watch him. I try not to watch him. I try not to watch them. I might turn red when embarrassed, when I have a crush on someone whom others think I look like. Just the other week, a woman mistook this crush for me at a work event. A white-haired stranger handing over a check intended for someone similar, but mostly different. The last time I let a crush like this survive was in college. A boy who sometimes got called my own name and I sometimes his. I hated this doppelganger, even worse, the coincidental attraction, but loved how, in a darkened hallway, away from the party, I traced his insides. I remember most the shine of his slick molars, his back roaring up against the worn painted wall. The boy I have a crush on will never know. He is one boy among many, and I one boy among many others, lying under this shining sun. I imagine the pair leaving together, retreating to warm painted rooms, one chasing the other beautifully. Later they will leave, and perhaps they do. This poem is called Inside. It's after this series called Shining Girl. It's on Apple TV, if you want to watch it. He left it inside of me, a fictional survivor tells a reporter. He left it inside of me, it's mine, but she can't take it home. It's a physical object in her abdomen, a damp matchbook placed in her person, gutted and left snuffed on a gritty beach. Objects and cavities, a metaphor for trauma sticking behind, a metaphor for evidence being out of reach when you need it most. A man doesn't just take, he leaves his trash inside you. Or, a man doesn't just take, he changes your universe. Or, disruption is time travel and I'm just trying to reach a stable plane. Did I mention the man can travel across decades, bring you an object alien to your world? Cruelty will leave you splayed and stratified. Cruelty will leave you without the matchsticks. My life is not adapted from fiction. It is my real small life. But as in the fiction, he does things to me, but also to her, and her, and her. They have names. We talk around it in circles. I am not the only one connected. We are all tangled in quantum string. We grew up together. He travels across time. Still, it can feel so quiet a violence. A boy who's supposed to be a friend doesn't stop when I ask him to. Still, it goes on for years. Different patterns and the same vile ends. This was my body, like that was her body. I could reach inside and pull it right out. Okay, and the last one for the batch of new poems is called Piano. This is the newest, the most rough. It's not finished yet, but that's like a good space to read then. To Dad's chagrin, Mom paints everything in the house white. White vases, white picture frames, even the piano. It's brown wood inherited from a neighborhood school, now lacquered in white. It begins small, but one addition to theme begets another. White countertops become white deck stain, become white stepping stones, interior moving exterior. Middle America, Mom with brushwork and time on her hands. I will never own a house, and this house is not my own. But each holiday return, I wince at its spreading. More buckets appearing from the depths of the garage when the house looked just fine before. White grass, even. A dropped can seeping into the soil, stain expanding in the yard. From it, I imagine a future. White bushes, 88 white keys, the entire house shifting and snowy. Everyone in hanging photos morphing white. Mom is white too, and this isn't the first time she's gone wild with color. It was gold once before, and before that, blue. I, her secondborn, came months early, miniature and unready to breathe. She doesn't like to talk about it. She asked the doctors why I was such a color. Then repurposed the pain, a childhood room painted blue to match. A reminder, if you face something each morning, its sharpness might dull. Mom gave birth to her firstborn alone in a hospital. And sometimes she sees X in the grocery store. And years later, her father wouldn't let Dad inside the house. No one came to see her, She carries these pains with her. She could fill her pain into pails. I do not care for the color, but Mom has loved hard and good her whole life. Dad and I forgive it. It's just a color. It's got nothing to do with us. Today, through the window, I watch her touch up a bench in the backyard, black foam brush in hand, tipped in white. She inspects her work, upkeeping a home we are all comfortable in. She's a beautiful being, a beautiful mother. Dad milling at her side, I watch her lather fresh coats through the window. How long might you be full of pain, resigning to clean slates and empty vessels? Or is it a daily consideration, painting everything the color you're confronting most? Okay, last one from, I was wrong. Last one from the first batch. I wrote this at Cave Canem this past summer. I finally got to know Cave Canem. It's very, very great. This is written for my friends Josh Bacon and Hughes were there with me. It's called Scuttle. Something strange in the air, texture thick, heady tempest brewing. The body leads you out a door into more livable atmosphere. And Black folk know more than anyone how you gotta listen to your gut, listen to where the body is pulling, spin out of scheduled orbits. So we flee, me, a friend from years ago, and a new friend I've made in the hours before, floating briefly, already in refuge, so brilliant in my burn. A new little trio, all pairs of walking legs. Sometimes you need a coffee, a reason to sit somewhere else, or alone time, or time to be alone, next to another, being alone, still getting to know one another in all sorts of spans. Not left lonely, but absorbing from others, silent feeling transmission, mirror neurons worked in one. Punctuality isn't always a requirement. Missing something scheduled isn't the worst thing that will happen. We must remind ourselves of this. Sometimes people burst into quiet stars in front of you, ascend toward the heavens. We'll miss it if we're not there to look, finding them only after shaking stardust off their sleeves. A friend can showcase galaxies when they're new to us, or newish, or new in this new context. There are bigger things, there are smaller things. We can be a little late and life will still go on. The sky will shift an odd color, then back to beauty again. The spider in your room will scuttle across the floor. They won't harm you. Okay. So the next couple poems are from my forthcoming book, Bad Forecast. There's a tornado in my hometown in 2011, and one of my friends was killed, and the tornado was very destructive, so a lot of this manuscript is about that. It's a mix of lyric essay and poems. I'm just going to read some poems from it. This has an epigraph from Gerald W. Barracks, who wrote, "Half the flood was tears." Adjacencies. A friend loses someone in a, and I strike collision from my vocabulary. Another loses family in a, and I am wary, or is it weary, of writing water and its adjacent innocuous horrors. I lose someone no one knew I cared for deeply, and you wouldn't believe how often someone jokes about the getting swept up in the air, overcome by waves, sideswiped by a car, or is it sideswiped by air, swept up by waves, overcome in a car. There's an overturning, always sudden gymnastics involved at some end. I am ever cautious and I am ever tired, the punchline being, even after erasure remains a faint blur. I aim to be planted, not unfurled. I want to be grounded, not exposed. I wish language to write us. I need words to keep us indolent and unready to lift off from earth. Abed comes to me indelible in pieces, flittered wisps, comes to in circles and shucked cornhusk litters, orbital, comes only in clouds, mercent and lavender wrought with stitches. From up below, a new space testament in dream of dirt, stretched beyond a surface, underneath cracked mirror, earthen warm. As months decay, or decades, I grow old, watching today, treading roses. This is called Slumber Party. There's a shotgun in the piano room. It is bound to go off, to play with a gun. This little one didn't think it was loaded when they aimed. It's too difficult to think about in the head at a sleepover. A child doesn't die right away. It flies to a city an hour from home. No one, same as the sky, will be tried for murder. Mom says to be safe in summer, but also don't sleep so much. I don't want to be dead most of the time. And when I do, there's the news, always reminding. Tornadoes and Trayvon. I wish you had a basement, but I'm glad Mom doesn't keep a gun. I don't trust myself, and the Zimmermans always find a way. When little, I wondered if God ever got tired. He must be asleep. Then I'll just read two more. This is called Seasonal. How we think it is over and odd, how fungus grows and infects people already hurt, how even after a tornado, it is spores that will kill a few more, how I know a boy who dies because of wind, how I knew a boy who died because of wind, how we call it nature and God and quiet in the end, how an aunt stays with us indefinitely after losing her home, how I must babysit a cousin I had never met before, how I'm happy to do it, how I do not know her, but we are both alive, how the government gives us too many toothbrushes, how she likes sandals and sunflowers and cries when she hears sirens, how she is also averse to peanut butter, how I pray when I hear loud clouds, how our stomachs churn all summer, how the odor in the air won't leave, how we fear more storms will strike another day, how we want to be anywhere but here, how loss can feel at once all surrounding yet make-believe, how there is not enough room for grief or bodies in the town, how they must lay all the corpses by the football field, how I hear stories of an aunt who lost her head, how we took shelter in the bathroom with the cat, how they called it hiding from the atmosphere, how she kept making strange noises, how she kept trying to escape from safety, how I thought of how I never had a boyfriend, how even in the small space we are arguing, how I fear my parents will end in divorce under blue, indifferent to keep us here, how we mustn't stay outside for too long after, how a church predicted the world will end just before, how a doomsday billboard illuminated the sky of impending rapture, how I asked a friend, do you think it's true? How it's not what we deserve, how here we often speak in retribution, how I get drunk with friends one night, then people fly in the air. And this last poem is called Unearthed. I preserve you, but come home to find a child digging you up, crumbs of us strewn in the carpet. The wind left little, but the rest I filled in the space of a volume. Here is your handwriting, a message, come home, the shame in a jar. After all I uttered was, I want to tell you something. A pool of water, then the pond. I put you back and think of warmer things. Thank you.
Well, I really look forward to seeing those poems in print. Yes. Yes. A little reminder that in 2 weeks, our readers will be Jan Beatty, John Rep, Brad Shaw, and Michelle Stoner, who is here tonight. And that on Saturday, May the 13th, the Greater Pittsburgh Festival of Books, we'll be hosting an all-day event, which will include a poetry tent under, we hope, lovely summer conditions. Gentle breeze, sunshine, God willing. About 20 poets will be reading, many of them folks who have read for the series, who have read in this bookstore, and who are really wonderful, I think they've all got about 15 minutes to read. So it's running from 10 to 5, and I think the first poet is Lynn Emanuel. And this is all free, open to the public, and you can just show up and register right in person. And so we really hope you.
It's at the Pittsburgh Theological Center.
And it is, in fact, not where it was last year. It is at the Pittsburgh Theological Seminary. Thank you, Arlene. And that's in Highland Park on Highland. And I want to thank Ari for helping us out tonight, doing the intro. Great, Ari, thank you so much. Thank you, Ari, and thanks, Paige. And I don't know who's at the front, but I...
Liz.
Who?
Liz.
Liz? Thank you, Liz. All right. And I want to just say, I'm going to read a poem by Jimmy Savetic. And there are probably people here who never met Jimmy, because we have some new folks here in this community. And Jimmy Savetic was the founder of the Pop Pittsburgh of the Hemingway Summer Poetry Series, which began in about 1975 or four, when there was some, used to be a year-round, well, a fall to spring series hosted out of the Creative Writing Department. And somebody had to ask, well, who can organize a summer reading series? And after some, you know, conversation, Jimmy, being a sort of a neutral party, was volunteered or volunteered. And he ran it single-handed for something like 40 years. And then maybe 35 years. And then a few years ago, I started helping him with it. And very sad to say, we lost him in 2019. But Jimmy was had an unusual and colorful life. He was a Vietnam veteran. He was an undercover narcotics officer. He was a homicide detective. He was an everyday of the week poet. He wrote every day. And he, unfortunately, many of his books are available, and they were published. Most of them were published by Bob Ziller. And this is one of them. And I'm going to read one of his poems. And Stefan mentioned God. So here happens a poem titled Another God Poem. And this was in the Post-Gazette some years ago. Not another friend dying, not another killing poem or love poem or drinking poem or another lust poem, another war poem. I want to write about God today, maybe like Francis did hundreds of years ago, how he danced around naked with God, laughing inside his heart. Sometimes I want to be Francis, looking at the sky, talking with birds and wolves. Sometimes I even want to feel the pain of the stigmata and argue with the purity of my soul. But mostly I just love talking with God about how he never has enough time to go fishing or enough time to go to the fights or baseball game or to go to the horse races. I tell him I'd buy him a beer, but he's always busy. Of course, he's always questioned about earthquakes and floods and tornadoes, even gets blamed for street violence. He told me most of his time is taken up drying tears of mothers that lost their child to madness. I asked him once if he could stop the tears before they fall, turn an upside down frown into a smile. He told me it's more complicated than that. It's the grinding gears of the universe. And one day I'd understand. He did say he does listen to prayer, real prayer. Not I need money prayers, but the prayers of love and pain or distress. Prayers of worry. He told me there are many griefs, old age, sickness, hard times, vexation of the spirit, sting of disappointments. He said that he has an ear for listening, especially prayers from the heart of innocence. Sometimes he even sends an angel that will ease the hurt. He had to run, but he told me to tell anyone who would listen. He can be found in a glass of water or in the warmth of the sun
or giggle of children. You just have to hunt. I asked him before he left, oh, God, can you give me the 3-digit number today? I'm not greedy. I only bet a buck. He smiled. That would be dealing off the bottom. And I went, looking at the bright edge of the cloud. Beneath the bottom. Look forward. Thank you all for coming out. Thank you, Ari, White Whale, all of you. Thank you in Zoom world, and look forward to seeing you in 2 weeks. All good wishes.